unfiltered opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
You secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Market Matters live streamed every Monday for your viewing pleasure. We're getting into the festive season. It is December. It's not December in South Africa. It's never been December in South Africa. I don't think that word is spelt that way. So welcome to December. We're going to have a shortened edition of the Insider Exchange podcast this month. So we're going to do this week. We're going to wrap up the year next week. We're going to do a special Christmas edition next week. So join us for that. But this week, we're going to be taking a look at a couple of things in Market Matters. We're going to be taking a look at the earnings numbers that are coming out from some of the South African companies. We're also going to be reflecting on some decisions made out of the United States. The current president has decided to pardon his son. The incoming president has decided to threaten BRICS. We're going to look at that. We're going to unpack what all of that means and hopefully try and make sense of it. But before we get to all of that, how was Black Friday? What did you buy?
Toilet paper and dishwash tablets.
Oh, we are the same. Not the dishwash tablets, the toilet paper, and I'll explain why. We're joined in studio by trading services manager at Thrive South Africa, Sean Dendere. He pops in every now and then to have these conversations with us, and we appreciate the input that he gives us. Sean, what did you buy?
Interesting. I did not do anything or buy anything for Black Friday. The reason being, look, for me, it literally is like a normal sale in South Africa. So some of the stuff that you seeing on Black Friday, if you wait, let's call it towards mid-December there, everything's going to be on sale again at the same prices as Black Friday. So why should I wait in queues or wait in lines for something I can get for the same price just a little bit later?
So the groceries thing for me made me realize that I'm at a different point in my life. and that point is understanding that the economy is tough, right? And it wasn't an intentional thing. So I sat there and I kind of keep track of numbers in my head at random times. And I'd noted what was happening with the price of things like toilet paper. And it was on special at certain points. And then you kind of saw specials for bigger packs, smaller packs and all of that. Mm. But when Black Friday rolled around, I specifically looked for things like that where you're going to use it at some point. You're going to use washing powder to wash your laundry. You're going to use toothpaste. You're going to use those sorts of necessities. And for me, I found that that was the biggest thing, right? I wasn't even drawn to buying a 58-inch flat screen TV because the TV I have at home, I barely watch anyway, right?
Probably works.
Right? So it didn't make sense, right? But there was a time in my life where I would remember looking out for those kinds of promos. Mm. This time around, I was there and they were like, Omo is, I think it was Omo. I'm not sure. It was one of the, multiple washing powders for your washing machine were at a 50% discount to what they would usually be any other time of the year. And I know this because I'd been tracking them for the last couple of months leading up to Black Friday. I bought enough for next year.
I got two things. Firstly, you know that toothpaste expires.
Oh,
really? I don't know that.
But it seems
what happens when it expires?
Well, I'm nothing because I'm busy. Second fun fact, how do you wash your dishes without a dishwasher?
With my hands, like a normal human being.
With my hands as well.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question. Did a dishwasher exist to you, let's call it, in your 30s?
When did I get my first dishwasher?
Oh, I thought you were going to figure out when you were 30.
Ish. Mid-30s, maybe.
So before that, you weren't washing your dishes?
My wife washed dishes. Okay. And it wasn't source of argument, so I just bought a dishwasher.
Also,
There
is an alternative solution to that, is just use paper cutlery.
I also bought some, my wife got sunglasses, 60% off, and then I bought some camping stuff, because like you, I know what the price is, and it was legit 40% off.
Yes.
And I'm like, I will do that.
Yes. Some of the deals were
But I already
actually,
have a TV, so.
Yeah, so some of the things actually made quite a bit of sense. And for me, I also looked at, don't know whether it was selfish or not, but I looked at stuff for the InsiderX community because we're growing at a rapid rate. And some of the technological things we were trying out and we're looking at exploring to make the show even better, it was like, okay, cool. Now's a good time. As good a time as any, right? So It was an interesting Black Friday, but let's get into the show. Let's get into market matters this week. We are expecting a lot of data. We're expecting a lot of information to come out. I want to get into a couple of things, but there's a question that we're going to ask Sean before he leaves at the end of the show that Simon and I have been debating, but we'll come back to that, Sean. I will not leave you to think on it. If I forget, community, please jump in the chat. Remind me in the chat to ask him the question. We are live streamed, so I can see that, but we're not going to forget for now. We're going to jump into market matters, and we're going to take a look at some of the developments that we expected, or rather that we're expecting this week. We're expecting non-farms payrolls numbers out this week. We're expecting process results locally, Alex Forbes results locally as well. There's a couple of things happening. Let's start with the local stuff. Earnings coming around. We're kind of wrapping up the tail end of South African earnings. But process is a big one, because just process, NASPERS, Tencent, the waiting on the JSE, all of that stuff. It's going to be a big one, whether we want it to be or not.
And the numbers, I mean, the process look decent. They're actually kind of cleaning up their portfolio to a degree. And things are looking a lot better than they have in many, many years. And market is liking it, to your point. I mean, the Indy's up over 1%, thanks very much to process being a NASPAS. Up, and then my screen disappears, up to 2.5%. But the numbers are just starting to look real. Like, it's no longer just this, all this stuff which loses tons of money. I mean, who knew? They're making money from delivering food. Yes. I did not think that was possible.
That's interesting.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you look at the rest of the business, it has been, and I think this is a tale of a lot of the NASPERS brand. It has been a lot of hit and miss from...
I think a lot of miss.
more miss than hit. Yeah, I mean, from the days when Wormquist built the business and kind of pumped into Tencent. Tencent is, and can be considered, but for all intents and purposes, the unicorn play that NASPERS got into at the right time, right? And it's kind of been feeling like they've been trying to get another unicorn ever since. Mr. D's come around, they've done some things there, there've been a couple of other online business ventures and everything, but nothing to the magnitude of Tencent.
I want to just touch on, obviously you were speaking to process, but I want to just go back to last week, right? Is that if we're looking at local companies, what I'm seeing is that there's a lot of deals that are being
made. M&A activity.
Must be nice to be in corporate finance currently, because every company is either selling something or buying something. And I think with a lot of sales that are happening, right, let's call it Black Friday for the companies, their balance sheets are starting to look really, really positive. And I think the way we're going, there's been a lot of strategic shift. Just going back to NASPERS, where we said a lot of misses. I think going forward, we're starting to see companies not really investing in many different pots and then just streamlining their businesses to what they're actually good at, was then obviously to fix their bottom line.
But you're also seeing that companies with stronger balance sheets are having a lot more fun in the M&A space, in the buying space and all of that. And to your point, Sean, around how companies are able to just readjust and reposition. This past weekend, Black Friday happens, obviously, and I found myself in an Edgar's, right? There was a special. It was a buy one, get one free kind of special or whatever. The Edcon Group, long since no longer listed, you know, I remember the pandemic, they almost went entirely bankrupt. They were filing for bankruptcy in 2020, right? So very different business to what it looked like back then. But the point around that was the staff in the store said that the entire accounts system was offline at that time. Do you see what I'm saying? And I'm thinking, at the most critical time of your year by volume, or by condensed volume. Yeah, you can average it out over the rest of the year, whatever, but condensed volume, Black Friday is probably one of the biggest times in a retailer's year, right?
Exactly.
At that time, where guys like Spar have battled with SAP and implementation of SAP, and you're sitting there and you haven't proof checked your systems or stress checked your systems, and then on the other side, the guys that have the healthy balance sheet, the ShopRite, went and rolled out an entirely new point of sale system across 2,500 stores before Black Friday. Everything was up and running like nothing happened. Very different ends of
the spectrum,
right? Both operating in the retail space, both providing mass convenience to consumers, all of that, big stores, all of that stuff, right? But you're able to roll out an entire point of sale system, upgrade it and everything. And we've heard no reports of any issues from that side. And then on this side...
Yeah, it is a balance sheet story,
right? It was just a very difficult thing. That's it. It was a very difficult thing to witness. And I found myself feeling a bit weird about it, because I was like, well, everybody else is frustrated as a customer. I'm looking at it from a business perspective. I was like, okay, no, you need to stop thinking about these things from that perspective. But yeah, that's what's been happening, as you've alluded to, is that a lot of the conversations from an M&A perspective perspective have been around, can we pick up good things? Amplats last week did another accelerated book build.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was well received.
It was. It absolutely was. I mean, it just makes me think that it puts pressure on Anglo Platinum as this whole thing, because they've still got, 65% of shares. They're going to either sell it or unbundle it. And before they can unbundle, they've got to do the London dual listing. I just look at it and I'm like, if I wanted a platinum play, I don't. But if I did, it wouldn't be Anglo because of this overhang that's sitting in the market. And although it's a preferred in by many people, it's just like at some point, 65% of the company is going to hit the market. There's going to be a lot of selling. So at some point next year, Anglo Platinum is going to be really cheap, surely.
That could be an interesting
play.
That's
my thought.
We spoke about this, though, and you weren't here, Sean. I want to get your thoughts on this. You weren't here when Simon and I spoke about it. We said an interesting play for that business could be China, because you're going to consume the platinum anyway. So why not buy the entire business? If it is up for sale, why not put in an offer? You can afford it. Pick up a good platinum miner.
Interesting, right?
China does have a strategic pork reserve, so why not? And they've bought 20 years ago.
Did you say pork reserve?
I was also thinking,
I said pork.
Bacon pork?
Yeah.
Look, I'll
no, that they have strategic reserves, so why not platinum? They bought that one, was it Metarix, that copper mine 15 odd years ago, listed on the JSE. China just came in and said, yeah, we'll have all of it, please, sir.
Yeah, we'll take the whole mine. Well, yeah. I mean, if people are looking at production, whether you're looking at internal combustion engines, hybrids, doesn't really matter what you're looking at. If you're looking in the platinum space, there's an Amplats available for you. If you're looking in the copper space, there's a copper company available for you. If you are China and you know you're going to be dabbling in both, whether in whatever volumes or percentages, it makes sense to have your own supply, right?
Yeah. I mean, strategically, for China looking into South Africa, obviously they're a massive commodity consumer, for the lack of a better term. It really would work well for them, right? Because then all their costs, I mean, China likes low cost. We know that. You're bringing down the cost. There's no third party involved. You're just getting it direct from source and you're consuming it anyways. And then you're speaking about the electric vehicles and, you know, where the world is going from a Chinese perspective. It actually could also do well for the electric vehicle market, which seems to be doing quite well as it is.
That's it. I want to get your thoughts on something, Sean, before we move on. Boxer's listing last week. That was something that we kind of expected would come into the market. We expected it. There was an IPO around 54 Rand, raised about 8.5 billion Rand there. Then we listed at around 63 Rand. Today, we've opened at 67 Rand.
Oh, hectic.
Are you buying? Are you long? Are you happy? How do you feel about Boxer?
You know what? I'm a ShopRite fan, right? Mm-hmm. And definitely going to be very difficult from, you know, a low-cost retailer to compete with a giant like ShopRite. My thoughts really on the Boxer listing is more from a pick and pay perspective.
Yes.
I think this is just, but I think it is a strategic move to try prop up what's happening at Pick and Pay. Because as we all know, Pick and Pay has really, really struggled, right? And this listing of Boxer in the long term might actually do quite well for Pick and Pay, the brand. Yes, Boxer will operate, do its thing. Hopefully, obviously, the share price, people are reacting positively to the share price, but let's see what effects it has to its parent.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we've always said that now the Pick and Pay brand has to stand on its own, because now you're going to strip out all of the Boxer value, and it's going to be sitting on one side, and we're going to drill down into what the Pick and Pay balance sheet now looks like, and that's going to be a telling sign.
Look, the balance sheet's better. They got to get their business going. I mean, I haven't been to a Pick and Pay in ages. I've sort of maybe once this year I've popped into one. It was tired. It was uninspiring. The big thing, of course, is that how long before the investment community says Pick and Pay, unlock value, unbundle Boxer? I'm reckoning February.
That's going to be a very interesting time, and we'll come back to that at another time. I want us to wrap things up with a look at things across the ocean. I can't say across the pond because apparently that's a British thing. So across the ocean, we're looking into the US. President Biden, after as recently as last month saying he was not going to pardon his son Hunter Biden, has pardoned his son Hunter Biden.
So I think Biden should just, so what's he got? 6 weeks, 7 weeks left in office. He should just go
God
crazy.
No, man. Okay, different.
He should start a strategic, actually America has a strategic cheese fund. Go look at that one.
A strategic cheese fund.
Cheese.
Okay. Pork and cheese. That's what today's about.
So I think he should go and eat with the cheese. I think he should pardon people. I think he should, apparently, what he could do, I think he should throw Trump in jail because he's got immunity, apparently. I mean, if I were president, and this is it, the man is what, like 120 years old or something, 80 something, I don't know. He's never going back into politics. This is his last 6 weeks of hurrah. Man, I would go down.
Well, to be fair,
I would declare the election null and void and just make yourself king for life. But he's old. So how about making Hunter king for life? Now you really upset the MAGA.
To be fair, if you think about the US system, I believe you're right, science. Until Trump officially takes office
on the 20th.
On the 20th, he is still liable for whatever cases are in
it.
Yeah, but you can't prosecute a sitting president.
Exactly.
So he's technically not president at this stage.
Yeah.
And if you're going to cause chaos, now's the time to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, so his charge for disrupting or trying to steal the last election has dropped because he won this election, which just, I mean, it sounds like some weird country you've never heard of with odd politics. But he has a fun fact. So Trump last time pardoned his son-in-law's father, Charles Kushner, who had done tax evasion and other crimes, and over the weekend has nominated him now, 4 years later, to be ambassador to France.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a criminal organization, essentially.
Well,
but look, I want to add to your fun fact, right? If we go back below, because I read something this morning, actually, was that, okay, so Trump had that pardon.
Mm.
Bill Clinton also had a pardon, where he pardoned his half-brother.
Yeah.
Before you get out of power, you say, you go free, you go free.
Pardon a bunch of people.
Free. Chill out.
Well, to be fair, right, we speak of a presidential pardon, especially in the US, as a big thing and all of that, right? It does exist in other countries. And I suppose if you aren't as efficient at understanding the pardon side of it, you could just apply for medical parole for a terminal illness that lasts for 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be clear, I mean, to your point, Sean, like all presidents do it, like hundreds. I think Obama did like thousands of pardons. I mean, it's just crazy. And in the UK, when Johnson went, you can, as the ex-prime minister, when you quit parliament, you can nominate people to the House of Lords. He sent some like 25-year-old woman who'd been his secretary or something.
Secretary?
Or pair something. I don't know. I know.
Mm. We've seen it play out before. But yes, let's wrap things up with Trump as well. Then coming back after, around the same time, it really doesn't matter. Threatening the BRICS bloc. Waking up, choosing violence, and threatening the BRICS bloc.
Look, I think that it is a negotiating tool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think that, you know, those threats could come into fruition? It's just in my opinion, I think it's just a power play to say, look, we obviously a big trading partner to the BRICS countries. I'm in power now. America first, great.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys got these ideas that you want to implement your own currency. Mm-hmm. How do I still get a piece of the pie? Let me threaten you.
That's a fair point. And ordinarily, those threats would work if we were, 30, 40, 50 years ago, those threats would have...
Oh, but you're thinking...
They'd carry a lot more weight in terms of the fear that the US would, or the fear that the US imposed on the rest of the world. The pandemic showed us that a trade war between China and the US does not leave the US unscathed.
Yeah, but I think you're making the error that you think that, I mean, what Trump is doing here is, and go back a week where he threatened Mexico and Canada with 25%. And then he claims victory. And I quote, Canada has agreed to enforcement in a visible and muscular way. And he's claiming victory. Man, they're trolling him. The Mexico president basically said to pick a finger, it's the middle one. And he's like, oh, we're winning. So he puts this crazy nonsense out. He then claims victory. And his supporters are like, yo, look at strongman. How is he going to claim victory here? There is no plan to make a BRICS currency. There is plan to not do czar dollar rupee and just do czar rupee, which makes perfect sense.
Yes.
So he's going to claim victory and say, you see, no BRICS currency. And his fans will be like, oh, look at this man. He's so clever.
Okay.
Interesting. I've never actually looked at it from that perspective. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense, actually.
Because look what the Rand did today. Crickets.
Mm.
Like, he's basically threatening to tariff us 100%, and our market is like, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that is less the RAND, and that is more the conversation you and I had pre the US election, to say if Donald Trump is to return as president, we know the level of crazy we're going to get. Mm. And the market is showing
and
that.
He's not even president yet.
The market is showing that. The market's sitting there saying, okay, this is very much in line with Donald. This is a normal thing. But it's also a very outrageous statement to think that you are still in charge or above every other country in the world. Yes, the dollar is still a predominantly used currency. Yes, it is still the most widely used currency in trade purposes and everything. But if the BRICS bloc has shown anything, is that within the BRICS bloc, every single commodity exists such that no commodity is lacking that we would suddenly need from the US.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, nope, 100%.
We're going to leave it on that note. That's been Market Matters for this week. Thanks so much to the Trive team for joining us in studio. Thanks to our YouTubers for joining us on the stream. Thanks to our TikTokers for joining us on the stream. Be sure to catch us. We're going to drop the Investor Insights and Deep Dive a little bit later. But before we go, we did not forget, Sean. Simon and I were discussing, I think it was last week or the week before that, we were discussing Domino's Pizza. And Simon made a very interesting point that it's not even the third best pizza he's had. What are your top five pizzas?
Top five pizzas. Very interesting question. So firstly, right, I don't think I have a top five per se, right?
That's a lot of pizzas, but hey.
Fine, we'll take a top
you
three.
You should have said that and bought in pizzas. And we could do a taste test just
Taste test, exactly, you know.
Any pizza companies out there wanting to prove that they have the best pizza, send us a box. We'll try it out. We'll let you know.
Yeah, but don't send bad ones because we will hate them.
But I think with pizzas, I don't generally tend to go for your traditional houses.
Mm-hmm.
Per se. So off the top of my head, you guys should try it. There's this place called Hello Tomato.
Okay.
So they basically specialize in pasta and pizza,
mm-hmm.
right? So very homemade feel, et cetera, et cetera. That would be my top, right? My top one. And then the other four. Now you just
they can all fight for themselves.
Yeah, no, I can fight for themselves. We've got to experiment, right? We definitely got to walk around, experiment. But the key is always look for a small shop.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a small establishment.
Yeah, the man is right.
That's where you find good pizzas.
Yeah, and the traditionals.
That's why obviously I wouldn't have like a top five because I've tried many random little places where you're like, okay, this was great.
Okay. This looks like a Hello Tomato.
Hello Tomato. We'll see. We'll try it out. We'll give you guys a review. We'll let you guys know. Sean, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming through. Those on the live stream, Jimbo, thanks for joining us as always. We love having you on the live stream. We hope the results go well for the exam. 7 hours sounds like a very painful way to spend a Saturday. But hopefully the handover goes well. And to the rest of our community, join us, subscribe, like. There's buttons somewhere on someone's screen. Follow everything. Until next time, that's been Market Matters. Thanks for joining us. And we move on to our deep dive. This week, we are taking a look at multiple income streams, establishing them, what would be the best way to do it, in our opinion, and how it could potentially go wrong, I suppose. Where do we start? I mean, you and I, for us, this is almost a normal thing when you when you have these things where you're self-employed or you're running a business or you're running a podcast or whatever it is, effectively one income stream, even if you're full-time employed, one income stream is not enough.
It just doesn't seem like a lot of income.
Unless you are in a parliamentary precinct. But we move on.
Start with tax. This is taxable. So if you get revenue in, you got to declare it, you pay it to SARS. And of course, any costs, if you're selling hot dogs, the cost of the heat and the dogs and the serviettes and everything is deductible. And it'll probably it might kick you into provisionals. That is certainly a possibility. Depends on size, etc. You can do it as a sole prop, you can do it as a PTY, whatever the case may be. But I think the other important point is your total addressable market is probably a lot less than you think. I mean, you know, great product. You go to various different markets, the rooftop here in Rosebank, you go to the Linden one that happens 4 times a year. There is awesome product there, but it's not always moving for whole bunches of reasons. So it's one thing that you make something that your family loves and you make it incredibly well and everything else and etc. Yeah,
to build a business out of it is something completely
different.
Even a
small little side hustle. So you got to still take it properly seriously. So again, let's go to hot dogs. Okay, so you're going to sell hot dogs at a market.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get permission from the market, obviously, to get a stand. How many people come to that market every every day, like every Sunday market. How many people are there on a Sunday? Okay, 2,000 people. And you can get that information from the purveyors of the market. Okay, 2,000. How many of those 2,000 are likely to want to eat at the market? Mm-hmm. How many of them are, and there's an easy way to do this, go find the food trucks at that market and take notes and count.
That's it.
You know, to get to that sense of, okay, how many people are actually buying food at the market? And from there, how many can I steal, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a ton in that regard in terms of treating it properly and smartly. And then, of course, there's just folks who could do something online. You know, maybe you could do some tax returns on the side, you know, hustle there, help people with their tax. Maybe you're a designer and you can make pretty pictures or something, etc. And there your outlay is much easier, you know, getting noticed, etc. But it comes to your point. I mean, one income just seems like never enough.
And if I think back to my first experience first experience in side hustles and alternative income streams, so to speak. My first real exposure was around primary school when we had those Entrepreneurs Day or whatever, and you had to come in, pick something to sell. And that's kind of where I immediately started to look at things from a different perspective, right? So everybody comes in, you decide what goods you're selling, a grade does it for a particular day, and all the other grades come and support you. And from that age, you can already start to see that some products are more popular than others, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes other people get sold out quicker than other people. And it makes you wonder why that person got sold out versus why someone else got sold out. And I kind of put that to the side. But when I kind of stepped into the latter part of my primary school, sort of starting into high school, it became a thing where I was like, I need to do something. I was always interested in the entrepreneurial stuff. I guess it runs in the family. But when you start to look at different ventures and side hustles, I think that where I am now, I've grown in understanding exactly your point, Si, is doing the research, understanding the efficiency, not just going into something from a multiple income stream perspective to say, I want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I was given the opportunity to go into things like affiliate marketing while I was still studying and all of that stuff. And while that's great and lovely, I remember there was one particular affiliate marketing company that wanted us to promote their products over other products in the market. And I said, what doesn't make sense to me is your product costs four times what the market product costs, and I'm supposed to convince my network of people that four times is warranted. And it was something as simple as toothpaste. Now, how do you convince people to buy a more expensive toothpaste so that I can get points in some structure? So you know what I mean? So you kind of look at things like that. And I think when you're looking at multiple income streams, it's important to distill through research what works, what is practical, how much capital outlay is going to go into it, and more than the capital outlay, what your outlay is as a person, especially if you're full-time employed. To start something while you're full-time employed means you must dedicate and carve out a certain amount of time beyond your 9-to-5 to do this thing.
Yeah.
And you must be consistent enough so that you can actually start to see the results of it. So you can't carve out an hour and then expect to see 7, 8, 10 months worth of results if you're only doing an hour a month kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the research, like you're saying, becomes so, so important. But when we look at the side hustles and we look at kind of just what side hustles are easy, you touched on the internet stuff. That seems to be a very good place to start. Online things like drop shipping and selling products online, having an e-commerce store, consulting and freelancing online and all of that. Obviously, it has to be something that doesn't breach your employment contract if you are full-time employed and doesn't create a conflict of interest. But I feel like the online space seems to be where a lot of people are gravitating for side hustles.
Yeah. And there's pros and cons to it. I mean, the thing with online is that it's nice and easy, right? You can get
it's convenient.
Ching on a weekend, you can have a website and everything rocking and rolling, but so can everybody else.
Saturation.
So how are you getting people aware of you and your products? And that comes down to, are you going on quality? Are you going on price? Are you going on finickety? Remember fidget spinners? There's a guy I know who made millions of ZAR off fidget spins because he just found a really, really cheap source, flooded them in, and then got caught with a ton of stock at the end of the hype. But that was fine. No, he had made his money and basically dumped it off. I think they were costing him like 80 US cents per each or something, and he could sell them into market. He was going direct to consumer at $100 or 50, whatever. His margins were obscene. If you're going online, if it's digital, that's easy. If it's physical, you've got to get delivery. Now, how does that all work, etc.? But it is, how do you get noticed? And it's more than just, you know what it comes back to? So I was at this event recently, and there was a chap who is a dropshipper, a very, very successful local guy, very successful dropshipper. And some woman was talking, she makes herbal products or something, and she was talking around, you know, she had spent money on influencers and hadn't got anything to show for it. And it's like, well, were they the right influencers? Why aren't you out there? Mm. And she says, I'm not good in front of a camera. And it's like, sure, but you are authentic. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's more valuable. Mm-hmm. So getting awareness. And, you know, these days of the TikTok and the Instagrams and everything, you really, really can do it. Facebook Marketplace, I mean, it is there, but how do you rise up? That's
what is your unique selling point? That's the phrase. Right?
It can be price, USP. It can be quality.
It can be anything. It can be authenticity, like you said. I mean, a lot of, you can charge a premium price for something, but because it is authentic, because it is made and unique in its structure or in its makeup, people might be willing to pay that premium price. But you can't have a generic product that is easily replicable, that is easily like marketable for someone else, and expect that your product will be the premium, where you've done nothing to create that level of premium quality or premium feel to it. That's on the kind of digital side, and things like social media and, as you said, affiliate work and blogging and vlogging, those sorts of digital worlds have got some value there. But something very simple that, well, I've seen it happen in places like the US, where they do this Airbnb rental model, where someone has a partnership with a homeowner and says, we want to sign a lease agreement, but we're going to sublease onto Airbnb. We're going to manage the Airbnb and all of that.
Yeah.
That has its own set of complexities. So when you're establishing multiple income streams, understand what those complexities look like, but also understand where in the value chain you want to sit. So an example would be something like an e-hailing service, a ride-hailing service, an Uber or whatever, or even a Mr. D. There were people that bought Mr. D bikes and leased out the bike. So then you're the landlord leasing out the asset, and you weren't the driver. Same with an Uber. You weren't the driver of the Uber. You bought the Uber, gave it to someone else. Someone else did the revenue and all of that. So that's it, right? So when you set up your side hustles or whatever your multiple income streams look like, understand, one, your unique selling point, two, the various spaces within, or the various areas in the value chain you want to play at based on your strengths. I mean, some people are much stronger at management of things, and so a portfolio of managing properties or doing that and the admin that comes with that is a strength for them. And so that might be a better side hustle than setting up a blog or a vlog or those sorts of things.
Yeah. Or becoming an expert. There's a woman I know who writes trashy fiction.
Okay.
And she makes tens of thousands of dollars a year selling it via Amazon as an e-reader.
Yeah.
To your point about Airbnb, you don't even own the apartment. You just rent the apartment and you need to get the lease that allows you, and then you Airbnb it. And so, I mean, there's almost no limit. The question is, how are you going to get it going? And some are easier, some are harder. You know, writing is hard and finding a fan base is hard. Make no mistake about that. The complete and absolute ambit from hot dogs to, I don't know, leasing airplanes by the hour.
No, finding a fan base is exceptionally hard. I mean, I think back to when you and I started this, when Insider Exchange was birthed. We didn't know where we were going to go. We didn't know what kind of fan base we were going to get. We didn't know what we were going to do with the show. But looking at it now and how great our community is and how big our community has gotten in such a short space of time, it shows you that authenticity. And for us, I mean, I'd like to think we're authentic. That's kind of why we have the Unfiltered Opinions on the shirt, is because we know kind of where our space is, and we know what value we want to add to our community. But I do like other side hustles that are kind of simple, right? And I think about practical things, right? So I think back to, I know someone who took their pension and built accommodation and now manages accommodation and has rental properties that people come in and rent and all of those sorts of things. They invested in it, they manage it, and they do the whole thing, right? Then there's someone who, from a side hustle perspective, went and started a business to take wedding photography or wedding photos of other people because they had a passion for photography, yeah. Right? So you can do that. And your passion can drive you. I think the base passion that drives everybody that starts a side hustle is the need for money, because bills must be paid, right? And when you look at side hustles, how do you then now look at the rates, the earnings? Because an hourly rate for a tutor versus an hourly rate for a photographer looks very different. They both do an hour's work in that hour, but different outcomes, different outputs. How do you then determine from an income stream perspective where your price point sits? And if you, because you don't want to be overpricing into the market, you don't want to be underpricing into the market, but you also can't be pricing your price based on an industry average that is unrelated to you.
Yeah. And there it comes into also what you're doing. So tutor, are you doing math or history, photography? Yes. Are you doing pet photography or wedding photography? You can do both, but you can't charge the same for pet photography as you would for wedding.
Unless the pets are getting married.
Sure. So it is doing a huge amount of research to A, find out what the average is. Also the average in your area. Average for South Africa, if you're a photographer, is not important. If you're an online tutor, well then sure, it is important. So, you know, your geographic space. And then it comes back to you. Do you want to go in cheap? Be very careful of cheap as your game. You know, ShopRite makes it work, but
they've got mass.
Yeah.
So if you've got critical mass, you can afford to play around with price because you have the audience.
Yeah. If your differentiating point is I'm cheap, well then someone else can just undercut you. And then it's a race to zero. Construction being the perfect example.
That's it. And that's the last thing you want. The last thing you want is to start a side hustle and then have to drop your price because somebody else is cheaper than yours and you're offering the same level of value or perceived value to the client. Because at the end of the day, you and I can think we are worth X amount, but unless a third party, being the client or the consumer of your product or service, agrees with that valuation, that's what's going to determine where you kind of settle, right? There was an interesting thing from, it was a video clip I saw online from Rick Ross. And he was having a conversation with Grant Cardone. And the question that was asked to him was around the differences in performance fees. As an artist, why do you charge less? And Rick's response was, I charge less. I'm paraphrasing here, of course, people. The video's out there online. Go and watch it if you want to. But his response was, I might charge you less on a Tuesday than on a Friday, because on a Tuesday, I might not be as busy. But I'd rather charge you less than let money walk out of the door. And for me, that's a critical balance between understanding value and sort of saying I'm willing to discount my value for a certain thing versus completely underpricing yourself or putting yourself out of the market, which is something where a separate South African, Vusi Tembekwayo, had a separate conversation about it, where he says he charges his price and if you want someone cheaper, he'll recommend someone cheaper, but he won't lower his price. So two different people, one willing to take a lower price, one not willing to compromise on price. Striking that balance, that's another critical thing you have to look at if you are looking to establish a brand or looking to establish yourself, whether it's a service or a product or whatever. You're new into the market and you're starting from a base where other people are there and you're trying to find your feet. How do you strike that balance between them?
I mean, it's one way. So going back many decades, when I was in Cape Town, just landed film and video background, trying to get into the film industry. And no one knows who the heck I am. So I printed little vouchers, which were, I would work 2 days for free. Here's your voucher, claim it whenever you want. And I got a lot of free days work that I then did. But then some of the directors and stuff were like, okay, this guy. And then they phone you up for paid gigs. So it was getting my foot in the door. Now, you would be, again, careful
about it. Striking a balance.
Striking a balance. But I needed to get in because I was completely, you know, I was in Cape Town. I'd literally been here 4 days. I needed work. I needed to make some money. And that worked alarmingly well and got people. And then because now you got your foot in the door, boom, boom, now you're off to the races. Everything's lacquer. But what it was is, you know, here's 2 days I'll work for you. Like, call it in whenever you want, but it's only going to be 2 days.
I found a very similar tactic does work as well from my perspective around, so both you and I do speaking gigs as well, right? And public speaking is always a weird thing because there's no market. There's no price
Yeah.
There's no, here's the price list, this is the service, whatever, right? You kind of benchmark on a variety of factors that no one really knows. And it's based on the client and the client's needs and the client's budget and all of those sorts of things. And you don't want to have a public speaking gig where you're outpricing the client, because then the client will might take you on the first time and never use you again. You don't want to underprice yourself so that when you suddenly increase your price, the client drops you because you've become expensive overnight. That's where I found it very interesting to manage that as well, around pricing. So unique selling point, got, tick, fine. Mm. Market, fine, tick. Research is done around what the market looks like. Kind of value add and differentiators and all of those things, you look at those things. And price is a component that you have to consider.
And that's a great point, because, I mean, I don't know what the price is in that case of doing speaking gigs. Mm. I mean, also, is it, you know, are you in a panel? Are you emceeing a whole day, half day? Is it a keynote, et cetera, et cetera? But yo, man, I've never fully worked out that. And there are some people who go, what I think to be alarmingly too cheap. I mean, I've had this idea we should unionize, because there's some folks who I think just are chronically underselling in terms of price, and I won't go that point. And I know that I lose work sometimes when I, you know, you get an email.
But that's the risk you run, right?
That's the risk you run.
But at the same time, I think when you are, especially if you're in the service industry, like the speaking and all of the blogging, the vlogging, those sorts of things are service related things. Finding value and attributing value to whatever service you are offering is the critical part, because once I can establish what value looks like, I can establish what price looks like from the value. So I'm going to give you X amount of value, and that is why I'm charging you X or Y price or whatever, right? With a product, it's kind of easier to say, here's the product, here's a similar product in the market, here's a benchmark, here's how other products in that same range kind of sell for. Services are particularly hard to price. And I think back to, I mean, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, things like garden services were a big thing. And to find someone to come in and do the garden work at a certain price or whatever, you start to look at different factors. The result of the service and the satisfaction of the service often gives the consumer the comfort to say, okay, I can understand why I paid for that, which comes back to your point around the speaking stuff. If someone is satisfied and says, you know what, Simon was a fantastic speaker, I can see why we paid him that amount of money. Then you kind of get past the whole phase of, am I too expensive? Am I too cheap? And all of that. But establishing value is critical to determining what you're going to charge for that value.
Yeah, 100%. And it is, it's a hard game to determine that point. And I would always say to folks, err on the side of more, because you can drop. It's easier to offer a 20% discount than it is to try and jack rates up 20%. But you mentioned garden services and pool cleaning. And I remember going way back now into the 80s. I did it for a while, where I would clean pools in the neighborhood. We never had one, but I'd go and clean it. And it was a nice bit of weekend money for me. But then it's sort of, you know, anyone can be it. What's your barrier to entry? And the barrier to entry is nothing. Like anyone with a bit of whatever HTH and a raker can do it. And the same happened with garden services. You know, there used to be some kids who would take their dad's lawnmower and go mow lawns. And I'm sure, and now it's just like, it's become almost an industries of them, but that barrier to entry. And I know from my sister who gets her pool done, and she flips through pool cleaners from time to time, and they're all struggling to make money. There's just far too many of them in the greater Durban area. And it's tough to make a good living. Now, we're talking here about a side hustle, but it's that commoditization of the service. Now, that's not to say that things that are commoditized aren't bad, but understand that they're commoditized. Understand what you're getting into. And again, what is your unique selling point? And I can't think of anything in the servicing or the pool and garden, but quite possibly there is something there. Maybe you aerate the roses. Maybe you know, there's almost anything. I mean, there's a chap I know who, me and him, and then I left it and he carried on and still does it 30 years later. He provides flowers to corporate offices.
Okay. So a
bunch of flowers on your reception desk, bunch of flowers here, there, everything.
Yes, comes in and maintains the flowers, changes the water, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
That's a service. That's a service that a company doesn't want to have to take care of. So when you think about your next side hustle, folks, think about these things. Think about the uniqueness of your value add or your product. Think about the value that you attach to it. Think about whether or not there are barriers to entry in the market. Think about how much you want to price it. There's so much to consider when setting up multiple income streams. But what I would like and what we'd definitely like from our side is for you as a community to let us know what your side hustles are. Let us know what side hustles have worked for you. Let us know what side hustles have failed for you. We've tried some things. I've tried some things that haven't worked out at all. Story for another day. But we definitely want to know, because like the things that are out there, we can always learn from each other. We can always share information. And maybe I might not have thought of something, and suddenly reading the comments and finding out that this is a side hustle that someone else has tried that has worked for them could inspire me to start a new side hustle. I've often found that some really good ideas come from reading other people's experiences and getting a sense of what other people have experienced. So please give us some comments, some insights around your side hustles and how you are making multiple income streams work for you. But until next time, that's The Deep Dive. And we wrap things up this week with a look at investor insights. We're taking a look at the CIPC's update on the Ultimate Beneficial Ownership Registry. They are planning to deregister 500,000 or more companies that are non-compliant with the regulations. Remember, to be compliant with CIPC regulations, we now have to include the Ultimate Beneficial Ownership Registry that needs to be submitted for every company that is registered. We're also going to take a look at our stock picks, see what our WAR looks like, and what we would like to update from that perspective. Annual returns on the CIPC. You cannot file an annual return and completely be compliant with the CIPC now unless you've updated this Ultimate Beneficial Ownership Structure Registry or whatever it is.
This is part of our grey listing.
Yes.
Trying to get off the grey.
Yes, trying to get off the grey listing. So greater accountability, greater transparency around companies and the ownerships of those companies. And so ultimate beneficial ownership is, even if there is a shell company owned by another shell company, owned by another shell company, you must drill down into who ultimately benefits as the shareholder. It doesn't have to be a direct shareholder, but who the ultimate beneficial owner of that particular business is. Now, it's interesting that it's determined in different ways, right? So it's not just about whether or not I have shares in the company. I can derive a benefit from a company, or I can maintain significant control and influence over that company. And that could be seen in the eyes of the law as being the ultimate beneficial owner. So if Jimmy and Simon set up a company and Simon is the director of the company, but Jimmy enjoys all of the profits at the end of the year, then just because Simon is a director doesn't mean he's the ultimate beneficial owner of the benefit derived from that company.
Yeah, no, fair point. And it is particularly when you start sort of the shell companies and stuff like that. But it is, you know, and I think particularly in trusts, because this is applicable across the trust space as well, which is to who ultimately benefits from it. Because this is, I mean, and at the end of the day, it's money laundering, right? It's all of that that the folks are concerned about. And I remember this because I had an interview. I actually thought it went into effect a year ago, but it was, I think it was got delayed or kicked down the something like that. And there was, but for most, no problem. It gets, you know, for my little PTY, piece of cake. For some, it gets complicated. I mean, let's for a moment think about, Standard Bank, who's owned a big slice by PRC. Well, I mean,
who then also owns Liberty. Well, has a subsidiary, right? So if you're doing an entire group structure, and Liberty's
if,
within
and
that.
And if Coronation owns 5% of Standard Bank, do they have to then, I mean, how far do they go down that line? Or can they, and maybe that's different because these are certainly economic interest and voting interest. And that's nice and easy. One share, one vote, so you get that sense. But of course, there will be companies holding shares or holding funds that Coronation has that are stay in a bank, and that's probably not how you do money laundering. I'm not a pro at the money laundering part, but it does get some fun in games.
Yeah, I think especially for larger companies, and you look at those kinds of setups, it does get complicated. And I know for guys like the PIC, where you have somewhat of a, it might not be a controlling stake, but it is a meaningful stake. Mm. It might not be significant to be north of 25%, but you own 15-16% of a company. Big. It's a big stake, right? Yeah. Especially if that company is a Sanlam or a Standard Bank. And then to look into all of that. But I think from an ultimate beneficial ownership perspective, it's more applicable to the private companies, yeah. The less around the listed space, because the listed guys have got those requirements in place already, right? It's already onerous on them. But from a private perspective, you and I, as citizens that have a company, now have to declare, are there other shareholders or other interested parties that derive a benefit from the company?
Yeah, and then, of course, there's different classes of shares.
Yes.
A's and B's shares, like we had we still got with NASPAS, Facebook, Google, et cetera, et cetera.
Where we got rid of with Fortress, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Fortress got rid of them. Pick and Pay had a control structure for a while. Remgro has got B-class shares.
Yes,
which
yes.
essentially control the company without having... So you haven't got economic control, but you've got voting control as well. Now, again, we've gone back into the realm of listed, but you can see those structures happening in the unlisted as well, where... So there's some high voting shares, like the NASPAS N's and A's. So the N's get the dividends. The A's don't get dividends, but they get 1,000 votes per N. So they effectively control NASPAS, but not economic interest.
There we go. So when you're looking at the beneficial ownership registry, be sure to consult a tax consultant. That's why they are there. They can help you. There's company secretaries that can help you out there to make sure that you are compliant. This is the week, I believe, that the CIPC has said that they would start to look to deregister companies that are non-compliant. So do a quick squiz of your CIPC profile, check whether everything is up to date and everything is in order. You should be able to kind of navigate it quite easily. And again, speak to someone if you need help. Remember, this is not financial advice, but you can get financial advice from a financial advisor. That's why they exist, right? That's kind of why they are there. We're going to look into our picks. We're going to see if we update things on our wall. We're going to start by adding things to the wall before removing things or moving other things around. Let's start locally.
Sure.
We are looking at Tsohosan Gaming and Boxer. Because Boxer listed last week, so now we can look at them, right? Let's start with Tsohosan Gaming. We had Sun International. We've got Sun International under alternative on here. And I suspect it was for reasons either around Tsoho or around someone like City Lodge that we might have liked better at the time. Where do we put Tsohosan Gaming? They gave us numbers, I think it was... Or they're giving us numbers this week.
No, they gave us last numbers
week.
Last week.
It was last week. Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah, yeah. I forget which day last week.
Yeah. Towards the end of the week.
27th, which was midweek.
Midweek.
Yeah. I got to say, the numbers didn't particularly inspire me. The stock did collapse a bit, and I think there is better out there.
Okay.
Most notably, I would say Southern Sun or Southern Sun is long been my preferred in the space. Hmm. They've got good operations. City Lodge I like, but they're just not getting it really, really working.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sun International and then Southern Sun. What's the Southern Sun share code? Sun International's SUI.
Southern Sun.
I like the sector. I absolutely do. Southern Sun has been doing excellently well. Mm-hmm. Soho just, I thought those numbers were a little bit bleak. They've got some good assets. Obviously a lot of gaming assets and a 12% stake in City Lodge, which is weird. We chatted about that many, many ages ago when that crept
up. That was such a weird discovery to find.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, I suppose they were expecting better things to happen with City Lodge, but so far not at all. Soho just, I couldn't get particularly excited about it at all. Notwithstanding, it's a good sector.
It's a very good sector. And I mean, their flagship brand is obviously the Monte Casino Precinct.
Want of a phrase.
Yeah. And if you look at just the other areas, I mean, you look at Sun International. Sun International is buying out Piemonte. Obviously, they're buying out Emperors now.
That got nixed.
Yeah, so that was that 7.3 billion rand takeover that went to the Competition Commission. Mm. That was an interest there. But to have someone like Tsoho, who, when I looked at the share price, kind of been straggling along between 12 and 14 Rand, really doing much, coming up to 14, down to 10, sitting at 12 kind of thing. I'm not particularly excited by it at the moment. I think we should put it in alternatives because I think, as you said, there are better alternatives out there. That was fairly easy to kind of sift through. There, it's a good industry, but it's a tough industry, right? You're going to you got to have your wits about you there. Boxer.
Sure.
Listed 63 Rand, went to 63.50 last week. Now, today, 68 Rand.
68 Rand and 70 cents, high 68.99. So I hold Boxer. I have them in the market for sale at a price about another 10% higher, and I'm going to get hit.
Okay.
I put it on good for a month, and I think I'm going to get taken out in a month. This thing's going higher.
Yeah.
I mean, I it's no longer cheap, right?
It's not cheap.
At 54 yes. Rand, which was listing price, that was a decent price.
Mm.
Absolutely, it was. I thought that was a fair price. 60, I thought it starts getting a little bit much. 68, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a great story. Yes, they freed from the pick and pay scenario, etc. They've got lots of rollout they can potentially do. We're a market, a country where our sort of low LSM grosses are not very big. Compared to others like what you see in Spain and South America and the like.
Mm. I know Poland,
Marx did some digging on that. But at the end of the day, it's starting to get into expensive land, I think. I mean, I really do. You know, at 69 Rand, you're putting in a lot of goodness going forward. And I'm not saying it's not a lot of goodness, but let's be clear, it's going up against the juggernaut globally, which is ShopRite.
That's true. And if you're already going to, I mean, at 100 Rand, you'd be at 30% of the ShopRite share price at that point already, because they're just around the 300 Rand range. Could this be another tale of a Capitec, where the share price runs to not 3,000 Rand a share, but I mean, Capitec versus its banking peers?
Yeah, you see, I think not, because I think here you've got a very low margin business, so significantly competitive.
Mm.
And Capitec really did innovate. And now with 21.5 million clients,
that's
can
it.
Cross sell. And
that's it.
You know, they give you a day pass for Showmax. They'll give you a day pass for DSTV. If you are
they
a Capitec client.
They continue to innovate.
Yeah. Boxer, with respect, you can do funky stuff.
Yes.
But you're not innovating in sort of the
that's
sense that we're. This to me is more a we buy cars.
Okay.
Although I think we buy cars is, again, taking an industry which is, you know, not a fun one, which is secondhand cars, buying or selling, and kind of trying to make it sweet and nice and pretty and all. Boxes, ultimately just a grocer.
Where are we going to put it? The other grocer we have, Spar, is neutral. And Pick and Pay, we had at Like It, because there was that upside potential from Boxer.
So
ShopRite is obviously blue chip, has been blue chip.
So doesn't Pick and Pay, which is now $30, doesn't, mind you, Pick and Pay's maybe got some upside. Shift to neutral. So where would Boxer go? I mean, I mean, at this point, it's expensive. I wouldn't be buying it.
It's
here.
Twice the share price of Pick and Pay.
Yeah. Well, it's more than
almost three
cap.
Times.
I mean,
yeah.
Basically, there was a point last week where I think you got Pick and Pay for almost free.
Yes.
And it's got a bigger market cap than Pick and Pay, which is why I say at some point there's going to be pressure to unbundle them.
Mm-hmm.
It's got potential. It's going to do great numbers. The share price is not going to collapse back to 54 as many have thought. This is not a Dis-Chem style listing, which was disappointing in the sense that it popped on the listing and came back. But that was expensive. This has just been priced at, the listing price was fair.
So we like it. We've got easy money. We're not neutral about it.
No, we like it.
We like it.
Yeah.
All right. We don't yet know if it's going to be easy money. We don't have numbers. We don't have performance.
Well,
we don't have results. We
need.
We'll get a first set of annual financials. We'll review that. But for now, we like the stock and we're going to add it to the wall. International picks. We are taking a look at Palantir as well as ByteDance's parent company, well, ByteDance, that's TikTok's parent company. Let's start with Palantir in the US. That was a Trump play. That's a Trump trade, very simple, straightforward defense company. We know how Trump is on pro-America, and we know how America is on wars around the world and propping up their defense budgets and the defense expenditure. Do we like it enough for it to make our wall? That's the question.
Price earnings, 335.
Mm-hmm.
Forward price earnings, 150. Hey, it's making cash, free cash flow per share. I did not expect to see that. Let's be clear, 18 cents on a 67 Rand stock, but I didn't actually expect to see that it would have a free cash flow per share. This is not a stock I know much about, but there are a lot of folks who I think are very smart who really, really like it. But this thing, to your point, since bottoming in 2023 at around about 12, is up more than fivefold in a couple of years. Has the market, and is now, you know, I mean, the average analyst says it's worth $40 and is trading at 67. Has it got ahead of itself. And I think the answer is yes. Nice business, but I'm not sure that there's much value at these current levels. Sure.
Okay. That's interesting. How much of that value can be attributed to Trump now becoming president? Will that increase the value? Obviously, with his pro-American stance, that bodes well for an American company like that.
I would say a bunch. I mean, the week before the election, it was trading at around $41, and now it's at around $67. It's up 50% on Trump.
Just on Trump alone.
And we've seen the same with Tesla. And I'm like, I mean, Trump doesn't like electric vehicles and doesn't believe in climate change as a problem. Tesla? I think it's overstretched. I think this is going to Trump and all of his bromances, and we saw it in the first term, there will be a
falling out of sorts.
And then Palantir will get a little bit cheaper when it happens, perhaps.
Okay. So for now, we might want to avoid it. I don't know if we want to even look for an alternative, because this one is very much the underlying factors that would drive it are very centered around certain things in a certain economy, in a certain country, in a certain region, in a certain president. So it's very difficult to kind of find an alternative for that. But for now, we might just want to avoid it a little bit. The other one that we want to take a look at is ByteDance.
Yeah. So how do you get access to ByteDance?
You would have to go through...
By shares, platforms like Hive. Okay, there are some that you can buy.
Yeah, there are some platforms you can go through. Okay. It's not very easy to get hold of, which also then affects how we view it. Because, I mean, I like the convenience of being able to get in and out of something.
I like liquidity on the JC.
That's it.
So, ByteDance, TikTok, love it. That algo is insane.
Yes. Yes. There is... Yeah.
Source in there.
Yeah.
America wants to ban it, and they've appealed. So, in fact, it was a bipartisan.
I'm not sure. Did Trump say he wants to ban it or bring it back?
No. Congress and this gets fun, right?
Yeah. Remember,
so Trump hated it, but one of his big donors is a shareholder in it. So now he loves it again. So he wanted to ban it. Now he doesn't want to ban it. But Congress and Senate passed a bill. House and Senate passed a bill with Biden has signed, which says they need to either sell off or leave America. But ByteDance is appealing on, is it First Amendment, freedom of speech grounds?
But in that case, the appeal needs to only hold for the next 35 days, because the moment Trump comes in and the Republicans have taken the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they can repeal whatever Biden would have passed. And it wouldn't have passed at that point either, because...
No, it's been passed. Oh, it's gone
been
the
passed.
Whole way.
Okay,
they
it's
can,
been passed.
They can repeal it. I don't know how easy they can repeal it. I don't know that Trump can just
I don't
drop
know if he
it,
cares enough.
But he can direct his Justice Department with his, to whichever weird AG he's going to appoint... Mm-hmm. To you know, go easy or whatever the case may be on them. That said, you know, if ByteDance gets banned in America, it just means that 100 million American teenagers are going to buy VPNs.
So the trade is the VPN companies. Okay, we've got it.
I got no idea on valuations. It is an amazing little business. It's the unlisted nature which always just makes it so much more different. Now, this is not traditional unlisted. Fair enough about that. You know, it's not some little stock no one's ever heard of. This one really does happen and does, you know, but it is going to be difficult to get on. Apparently, shares are trading about $150.
Down a bit for the year. Well, up a bit for the year, but... down over the last kind of 12 months, if you're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Not much. Yeah, I think for me, the access to the stock becomes a bit of a challenge as well. But what they are doing, I mean, you know, they've been rolling out a lot of good stuff within that TikTok platform. It has taken over from a social media perspective. It's difficult to launch a social media platform that people are going to gravitate towards.
On any sort of number.
That's it. Mark Zuckerberg did it. We launched Facebook. We kind of had an experience of what that was like. We had an experience of what things like MySpace looked like. When Twitter was launched, it was a different version of those things. To launch something like, and to avoid it being something like Snapchat, where the craze wears off, you need some form of sustainability. And for now, they've been able to monetize various areas of TikTok and all of that. So I think they're doing well from a business perspective. And if they lose that US market, I don't know if it's something that's going to materially affect the business. I think access to the share for me comes back to that. It's a difficult share to get hold of, but I do like it. I think it's got a place on our
wall. Yeah, I like it. Where does it go?
Where does it go? That's the other thing. So It's definitely not going to be easy money. We do like it. We're not neutral on it. There aren't too many alternatives at this point. And if there are alternatives, the likes of Meta, for me, are mainstream. And I wouldn't. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think if you go, the other play that you have with someone like a ByteDance is you're removing yourself from the concentration of US stocks. We've got so many stocks that are US based, all companies, even Asian companies go and have ADR listings in the US. But you want to have something that has a WhatsApp, a WeChat, like an alternative. I've always been an alternatives guy, right? So I think we like it.
We like it.
We like it. Yeah. All right. That's where we're going to put it on the wall. Folks, if you have missed out on our conversations, they are available. We do encourage you to go catch up on the live stream. That's why Market Matters is no longer part of the packaged segment, is that Market Matters is now listed under our stream section on our YouTube channel. But we do still put up one audio file for all of the segments together, so we combine it so that you don't have to go and figure it out. And we do that for your listening pleasure, the same way we have the show for your viewing pleasure. Please engage with us. Please let us know your thoughts. We've been loving your thoughts around the cost of education and what your experiences have been. Thank you so much for that. Let us know what your favorite pizzas are as well. We will put out a poll. We still have the Rand poll running for the next week. We'll give the results of that Rand poll next week in our final episode. Remember, next week we're taking a break because we also get tired. It's also been a long year.
It's December.
It's not December. We don't spell it with a C. It's December. So we're going to do our final December episode next week. Please tune in for that. But until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.